working on new product. I got to team up with you this winter on some exciting new things that are going to come out at iCast. And
I have some pictures and videos on my phone that I just haven't been able to show anybody. And it's like, oh, I'm chomping at the bit. This is going to be pretty cool. That's all we can say about that. The rest of it is just
more to come.
Yeah.
More to come. Yes.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Shields Outdoors Podcast, your source for information on hunting, fishing, and all of your outdoor passions.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Shields Outdoors Podcast. Mike Anderson here, along with my co-host Solomon.
Heyo.
And Ashley.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
And Solomon.
Hi. Heyo.
Heyo.
Yes. Today we are joined by Danny Thompson of Garmin. So we're going to be talking a little bit of live scope, a little bit of Kraken trolling motor, a little bit of fishing in general. And, if you don't know Danny, he is very much so a whitetail enthusiast. So there's a pretty good chance we're going to have some food plot talk at the end. So Danny, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. You know, it's actually the weather's starting to turn around here. I was out loading the truck, getting ready to head to Chamberlain, South Dakota for Shields University. So looking forward to some nice weather and some walleye fishing on the river here.
Oh, there we go. Perfect. So, yeah, talk to us a little bit about that Chamberlain event. What do you got going on down there?
Yeah, so, you know, we've been doing this for a while now, actually. And so Shields puts on the big fishing university for all the associates. And it's a great opportunity for Garmin and other companies where we get to go and train the associates. And so they basically go through a university style, you know, learning, and we're on the water, we're in the classroom, we're at the pool. I mean, they do all kinds of things and learning about the latest baits and rods and lines. And with Garmin, you know, we're going to get them on the water with Kraken trolling motors, showing off the Kraken. We're going to be showing live scope. We're going to be showing technical stuff. I mean, all the stuff that they can use as tools kind of as they go back to the store and sell this stuff and really be able to knowledgeably speak about it, you know, to consumers and whatnot. And then at the end, we finish it up with a fishing tournament, which is always kind of the funnest part of the university. So we go out, we go walleye fishing, and we actually get to compete against everybody else, you know, with the Shields associates and do kind of a cool little walleye fishing tournament. So it's always a good time. It's typically my first time on open water of the year every year, so I always look forward to it.
There you go.
Awesome.
Perfect.
Is this going to be your first time out on the open water this year?
Well, no. So I actually was down to Lake Fork in Texas this year, and then I was on Ray Roberts. So I've got to do a little bit of open water fishing this year, sure. But I guess if it's out of the upper Midwest, it doesn't count.
All right.
So.
Yeah.
I mean, the weather has just been unseasonably warm. So that's why I thought maybe you've already been out. But
yeah. And I've been hearing the reports like from pool 4 and pool 2 on the Mississippi River there. I mean, the bite's been good out on the Fox over in Wisconsin. Like, people are catching fish. And I was coming home from working on some food plots the other day, and the boats heading out towards, you know, Fox River and just the Green Bay area was pretty crazy. So people are on the water for sure.
Mm-hmm. The rainy river's hopping too. It's,
yeah,
you know, like being in social media, like looking at the Shields page, what posts were tagged in, seeing stuff from my buddies. Like this past weekend, I was in spring cleaning mode. Like there was just stuff that had to get done. And I'd look at my phone and I get a notification. My buddy's holding like a 8-9 pound walleye on the rainy river. I'm like, I need to shut my phone off. Like I can't do this right now. I'm sitting here folding all my 8-year-old daughter's clothes, and then all of a sudden a notification pops up on my buddy holding a 10-pound walleye, and it's like, this is just miserable right now.
See, my goal this last weekend was to get out for the first time and get the boat ready. So my brother and I got the boat ready, got the trolling motor on, batteries and electronics on and all that stuff, and then set out to get out the next morning, and it was about 35 mile an hour winds, and we're like, you know, as much as it would be fun to get out, it's probably not worth it, unfortunately. So we went from the shore a little bit.
Yeah.
But the boat's ready, so we're in that mode now.
There we go. We're set. So Danny, for the people that don't know you, can you just explain your role a little bit with Garmin?
Yeah, for sure. So I've been with Garmin for a while now. I think around 8 or 9 years I'm coming up on here at Garmin, and it's kind of been, I always tell people, I started at Garmin and got to live through like the glory days, right? So when I started, we really were kind of first getting into this inland fishing game, and Garmin does a great job offshore. And, you know, we started going after the bass markets and the walleye markets and the ice fishing markets. And, you know, I've been along during the introduction of the Force trolling motor, the Striker line, the Echo Map line, and of course, LiveScope, which has been just amazing to see, you know, where we've gone really in the last 8 years here, really the last 5-6 years where Garmin has gone. And it's been such a fun thing to do. And, you know, I kind of cover a lot of different accounts. I work closely with Shields on a lot of the universities and different events and fish fests and seminars. I was at Eden Prairie last weekend giving a seminar, so I get to do a lot of that stuff. But I also work with some distributors, and then, you know, really kind of help oversee that ice fishing lineup. So working on new product, I got to team up with you this winter on some exciting new things that are going to come out at ICAST, and, you know, really just kind of get to do a mix of things. I travel a lot. I think I'm at night 53 since the first of the year so far. So I'm in a hotel a lot. I drive a lot, and, you know, really just kind of get to kind of live out my passion talking about fishing and hunting every single day. So I love it.
Yeah, that's not a bad gig at all. And you mentioned some content and a product that's going to come out at ICAST. And I have some pictures and videos on my phone that I just haven't been able to show anybody. And it's like, oh, I'm chomping at the bit. This is going to be pretty cool. But yeah, I that's all we can say about that. The rest of it is just
more to come.
Yeah. We'll
more to come. Yes.
Yeah. You know, another thing you've been doing is you've been doing like some seminars and stuff. And I saw one you had with Shields. Can you talk to us a little bit about that one?
Yeah. So it was actually a really cool event. So it was Twin Cities Walleyes Unlimited, which is a group of walleye fishermen, you know, obviously in the Twin Cities here. They kind of teamed up with Shields and all the electronics companies. So they actually offered a workshop. So in the morning, Lawrence spoke for a few hours. And then in the afternoon, I spoke for a few hours. And then they followed it up with Hummingbird. And so, you know, Shields customers were able to go and learn all three brands if they wanted, or sit in on the one they wanted to, but being able to like really kind of have a deep dive on, you know, electronics, what's new, what's out there, how do I operate the electronics that I have. And I've been doing kind of a fun seminar people have really been enjoying, where I talk about the Garmin product and I talk about, you know, some of the settings and whatnot that you can do with it, but then follow it up with, you know, forward-facing sonar is really kind of revolutionizing the way we fish and the techniques that we do. And from a walleye fishing standpoint, you know, there's been a lot of walleye fishermen that are in the front of a boat with a trolling motor like a Force or even now the Kraken, where it's very responsive. And we're essentially bass fishing for these walleyes. We're chasing them around. We're using baits we've never used. And, you know, like slip bobbers. Slip bobber fishing for walleyes. There's a slip bobber from, I believe it's Kalen's now, that literally is for sniping walleyes with forward-facing sonar. You know, we're using specific baits and weights and all these different things to make slip bobber fishing work with forward-facing sonar. And then, of course, Pure Fishing has come out with a complete line of forward-facing sonar optimized baits like the Finisher and the Power Switch and the Kredge, all designed for fishing around this forward-facing sonar. So I go through some of that stuff in this seminar, and people are just eating that up because it's just kind of cutting-edge technology, cutting-edge techniques. And, you know, and then, of course, we talk about bass fishing. I mean, look what happened on Lake Fork, and look what happened in the Red Crest, where bass fishermen are using spinning rods and fishing tiny little minnow baits, and they're strolling and mid-strolling for these bass and absolutely catching them like we never have before. So there's a lot of cool stuff. I mean, obviously, forward-facing sonar has its, you know, people wonder about it, like, okay, what does that mean for the fisheries and that stuff? But when it comes to catching fish and techniques, I think it's kind of exciting because, you know, I was in Shields, like I said, in Eden Prairie last weekend, and Rapala just came out with the whole new Crush City lineup. And I believe it's the Freeloader is their minnow bait. I mean, you guys are sold out. Like, people are just going nuts for these baits, and it's people fishing with forward-facing sonar. So, super exciting stuff. Like, it's fun to kind of see, you know, how people will utilize this stuff and how these new techniques are kind of coming about, you know?
Yeah, it's just, it's incredible, like, the advancements for facing sonar is made. Like, the term game changer gets thrown around a lot. Like, oh, this lure is going to be a game changer. This process is a game changer. But, like, forward-facing sonar truly is. I mean, to the point where, like, there's people that are wanting to ban it in states and in fishing tournaments. Like, what are your thoughts on, like, I helped create this whole thing and now there's all this, you know, concern about potentially banning it? Like, what are your thoughts from the Garmin side?
Well, you know, I think, you know, as all fishermen and every person in the industry, what we want is we want the industry to be successful. We want grandpas to take their grandchildren fishing. We want children to get into fishing. I think forward-facing sonar helps kind of provide some of that, and it's getting people into fishing. But also, we're concerned about the resource. I don't think you will ever meet a person who's a real hunter or fisherman or outdoorsman that isn't concerned about the resource. And so I think what the, you know, DNRs like we're hearing in Wisconsin and Minnesota and even some of these states down south, I think what we need to look at and kind of what they're looking at is, okay, we have this technology now. We are catching more fish per hour sometimes with this forward-facing sonar. So what does that mean? Like, how do we manage the fishery? How do we manage the fishermen with this technology? Like, it's new to us as fishermen, but it's also new to the DNR and to the fisheries and that stuff. And I think we're kind of at this turning point right now where we need to figure out what that means. Like, I'm a sales guy. I want to sell LiveScope. You know what I mean? I'm not the guy that necessarily maybe knows what that means for the fish, but I do know that I can catch more fish with my LiveScope. We see that, you know? And so I think all outdoorsmen, like, and we need to work together and just kind of figure out what that means, you know? Mm-hmm. Does it mean lower limits? Does it mean regulation on stuff? I don't know what that means, but I think that's what we got to find out.
Yeah, for sure. This isn't the first time that people have been concerned about a product like potentially destroying fisheries. I mean, the first time contour maps came out, or the first time, you know, side imaging came out, mm-hmm. you know, like we've experienced this before, but it's just, we're in a time of so much, you know, technology and information being able to be spewed out so quickly. You know, I can catch wildfire so fast. I mean, like being in the social media world, like we'll put out a post about Garmin and there's so many people that are angry, like, oh, it's going to destroy fishery. Oh, it's like a video game now. But like, if you think about it from the other side too, it's like, okay, I've got a 14-year-old nephew that like loves video games. Now, hey, we've got LiveScope. This is like video game fishing, but you're actually fishing. Like, maybe it's less of a barrier to entry and makes it more interesting for youth to want to get out and fish, you know, like it's easier for them to get on fish. So it can be a positive too. You just have to, at the end of the day, respect their fishery.
Well, and like the example you said too, like a grandpa taking a grandson out fishing or something like that. I mean, yes, it might help you catch more fish, but like it gives a better experience for that kid right away too. I mean, if they can catch a fish, I mean, that's almost like a hook, line and sinker thing right away for that kid.
There's there's still technique involved. Right, like, you know, it doesn't still guarantee you're going to catch the fish. Yeah. You know, you might end up chasing them, you know.
But and I think that's where it comes from us sportsmen, right? So I heard something today on social media, and it's like we talk about recruitment a lot in the outdoor industry, and we need to get youngsters into it. We need to get, you know, ladies into it. We need to get more people into it. And as the population grows, like the gap of non-hunters, not necessarily antis, is continuing to get larger, and as the baby boomers kind of go on, right? So the number of hunters and stuff is going lower. So I think technology is going to be one of those things that helps us with our recruitment, and we got to be careful on how we present that and always kind of put nature and you know, conservation first, because we don't want to turn those non-hunters into antis. We want to do things the right way. And just because you live in New York City and you aren't a hunter and you don't plan on being, that's fine. We just don't want you to be anti, right? And I think as long as we do everything correctly and we're doing it for the right reasons, you know, we can continue to, you know, have that and have people be okay with it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely a good way to think about it. So I'd like to get a little bit into product talk. So talk to us a little bit about what's been new. What's came out, like the latest and greatest that you can head to your local Shield store and check out?
Well, so like I was saying earlier, that's kind of the fun thing of working for Garmin is it just, I feel like every time I turn around, there's something new. Like, you know, we got the Echo Maps and then we bought Navionics and then we came out with the trolling motors and then we came out with LiveScope. And so it's been kind of exciting and it's almost hard to keep up, right? Because there's always so many new things. But right now, I think for me, you know, being from Minnesota and an upper Midwest multi-species angler guy, the new Kraken trolling motor is probably the biggest advancement or new product that I'm excited about because it pairs with the whole ecosystem of what we have. So I've got a boat and I've got some live scope transducers that I want to put on this boat. Now I have a trolling motor that works for me and they come in a 63 and a 75 inch shaft. So finally something long enough for, you know, a big Ranger 621 walleye boat. And I can actually integrate the LiveScope transducer right on that Kraken trolling motor, which is nice because in the past we were limited to only running pole mounts, which is great. But as I was saying, us as walleye fishermen, we're in the front of the boat, we're on the trolling motor, and we're looking for fish, we're hunting specific fish, and being able to have that LiveScope transducer mounted right on the trolling motor has been, you know, kind of a really big piece for me. You know, I got to use it a bunch last summer, kind of pre-announcement, and I was just super excited about how much fun and how easy it was to find fish without having to run over to the pole on the side of the boat all the time. So I think the Kraken is probably kind of the biggest thing right now that I'm most excited about. You know, a lot of people putting them on their boats this year. When I was at Shields last week and you guys were just selling them like crazy, so it's been pretty exciting to see that Kraken and how well it's doing.
Mm-hmm. So can you explain a little bit what the Kraken does versus like your first Force motor?
Yeah, so the original Force was more of a scissor lift style trolling motor. So it's a little bit more designed for like the bass fishermen where, you know, the entire motor kind of lifts up and folds into the boat. They only came in up to a 57 inch shaft. So if I were to get in like 2 foot waves on a nice walleye chop, the trolling motor would be coming out of the boat. And it was more just kind of designed for that, you know, shallower bass fishing boat, where the Kraken is a pivot style. So it kind of pivots back and the shaft will have actually, you know, slide through there so you can stow it in the boat a lot easier. It works very well with the remote control that we have with the gesture mode. So wherever I point that remote, that trolling motor will steer to. And, you know, having live scope on the Force, you're able to mount that live scope right to it. Well, on a pivot style, we've never been able to do that. So that was kind of the big thing is Garmin was able to integrate a pivot style trolling motor with forward facing sonar. So, you know, that was kind of a very big piece of it too. And then, you know, it has all the other things that you love, like the foot pedal and whatnot if you need it. So, yeah, it's been pretty cool to have that for sure.
That's awesome. Can you run your live scope in perspective mode with that Kraken too?
Yeah, so you get a mounting kit to mount that transducer to the trolling motor, and you can go in forward, you can go in down, and you can go into perspective mode.
So what's That's the perspective awesome. Mode? What's that?
Perspective mode is more like, well, so it was designed to run in shallow water. So live scope, typically you have like 135 degree cone angle from front to back, 20 degrees left and right. And so when you use perspective, we turn that on its side. So you have 135, actually it goes to 150, but you have your wide cone angle left and right, and you have your narrow cone angle up and down. So in shallow water, we can see a lot farther distances because otherwise, as we got too shallow, the forward mode and the down mode, you couldn't see very far. So in perspective mode, we're able to see real far in shallow water. So like out on Chamberlain, we'll be fishing the riprap along the river and we'll be in about 6 feet of water looking to shore and we'll be able to see all of those walleyes as they're kind of up in the riprap there spawning and whatnot. So perspective mode works amazing for early season walleyes.
Yeah, I was just going to say that too. The first time I was really introduced to perspective mode was on Chamberlain and you get next to the shoreline and you can see exactly how far that riprap starts. So you can see that like sand or muck to rock transition, and you can literally see those fish laying yeah. right on the end. And like oftentimes you can, you know, you can see it when you're in forward mode, but you can only see 20 degrees, you know, like yep. now you can see 150 degrees or whatever. I mean, you're not going to see like your bait drop down like in your standard down or forward mode, but like, you know, the fish are there. So yes. it's a very powerful tool once you like learn how to use it properly.
For sure.
I'm excited for that because I'll be down there at the Chamberlain University as well in the yeah. next couple weeks, whenever that's at. So I've never used perspective mode either. I've used the down and forward, so I'll have to connect with you and get some eyes on that to see how that works. I'm excited to see that happen.
Yeah, we're gonna have a first timer at Fishing University oh, yeah. over here. Awesome. Yeah. So he has I'm no idea it. What he's in for.
It's a lot of work. I think those guys go from like 6 in the morning till about 9 at night, so it gets to be long days, but it's fun.
Sign me up. I'm ready.
Yep.
Absolutely.
How about other like technologies, like anything with like AI?
No, nothing like that yet. There's kind of a funny thing going around social media right now. I don't know if you guys seen it, where someone made an April Fool's and it was like, check out the new Garmin LVS 36. And it's just like incredible clarity of like fish and basically AI type of stuff where someone, you know, put a April Fool's joke out sure. there. But
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's, I mean, like with your new Active Captain app and like the new Google glasses and the AI stuff, yeah. like people are starting to cast that to like, you know, your what's those Apple
Your
glasses?
Apple Vision Pros.
Oh,
Vision
right.
Pros. Yeah, I seen a YouTube video
yeah,
on that.
I saw yeah. Jay Siemens fishing with like some yes. AI glasses too. It's like that's some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, like it's not quite there, but it's like, yeah, I seen it and I was like, wow, that's crazy.
It's coming.
Mm-hmm. But you know, you are starting to get some pretty cool features, like with some of your new graphs, like being able to do the screen recordings and stuff like
yeah.
that too. Can you
yeah,
touch
that's
on
cool.
that?
On the new Echomap Ultras have the ability to screen record your cell phone through the app, which is really cool. Like everybody sees really cool stuff on LiveScope all the time, right? And you're like, oh my gosh, I'm catching these 10-pound walleyes and I can see my jig go down. Now you can record it on your phone and like share it to social media and share it with your buddies. So like I've already, and we just announced those units like not that long ago, I've already gotten like a bunch of people texting me videos of LiveScope saying, hey, check out this fish I caught. And it is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. So the Echo Map, is that go in the water?
The Echo Map's just like a line of like chart plotters.
Okay.
And so like the LiveScope transducer itself will like go in the water, but the Echo Map screen is like our line. And then the Ultra 2 is like our bigger screens, like the 10-inch and the 12-inch. So like you got to get a little bit more upgraded screen to do it, but at least you don't have to get like our top of the line now with the GPS map series like you used to have to do. So.
Mm-hmm. So for the people that are ice fishermen, the ones that own like the ice castles and wanna get LiveScope up on their big TVs, like what do you need for that?
Well, what's cool is we started offering a ice house package. So like basically what you need is you need one of our GPS map 8600s. And so like the 8610 is kind of the least expensive way to get into it. So it's a 10-inch screen. And what's important is it has the HDMI out port on the back. And so you can run HDMI cable from that chart plotter into your TV, in your ice castle or your snow bear. And so you got to go that route. And then you get all the normal LiveScope stuff. But we actually offer it in a bundle now. And I know some of the Shields locations were even doing it like kind of their own bundle with like a 12-inch screen, because some people wanted an even bigger screen, you know, for the chart plotters. So, you know, there are options, but you got to jump up to that GPS map unit in order to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's nearly unlimited customization when it comes to that stuff now. Yeah. It's crazy. It's like, it basically just comes down to like how you want to fish, what your yeah. goals are with that. But like, I know like I'm still using like the LVS 32. I'm just too cheap to upgrade. And, but like some of the new ones with the bigger screens and the faster processing, just the clarity on there now is just absurd.
Yeah, for sure. And the cool part is that's like one thing that I always show at Shields University. So like a lot of people have the 32 still, and Shields offers it, like had a great deal on it this winter in the ice bundle. And like when we are, we'll do on the dock training, we show the different live scope transducers side by side. It is cool because like you can see a little further and a little bit more clear with the 34, but the 32 is not a bad option, especially for ice fishing, because ice fishing, you're like in an aquarium, like nothing's moving, hopefully, mm-hmm. right? But the fish. And so like the 32 is like they perform pretty dang well through the ice.
Oh, absolutely. I'll vouch for that 100% because like I do a lot of run and gun crappie fishing, like chasing basin ones. And yep. I mean, that's more than I need for that. And part of me thinks like at the end of the year when they've been pounded like for the past 3 months, that little bit less transducer ping on them can be enough to like get them to stick around a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. And the cool part with the 32 is it fits in a 7-inch hole where the 34 doesn't. So like I have a lot of guys that'll run it just because of that too. So,
mm-hmm. So what about open water? What are you using?
I mean, I just transfer it right to the boat. Like,
sure.
I actually just like run it in my ice bag, shuttle. And then I'll just run a pole mount. Usually, you know, it just all comes down to preference and what mm-hmm. you want to do. But like, for your budget friendly people, that works really well. And they make shuttles nowadays where they have like locking, you know, ports or whatever. Like, you can just lock your shuttle right in there and hook it up to your pole mount on the side of your boat, and that works. It gets the job done.
Yeah, I use it like that all the time because I'm in like other people's boats all the time. So like I've got a couple different ones and different shuttles. One's a GPS map, one's an Echo map, and like I can jump in a buddy's boat and just grab my unit, my pole mount, and have live scope in there if he doesn't have it. And then like, you know, when I fish with my daughter, we might fish towards the back of the boat. You know, it's a little bit safer and whatnot. And then I might move to the front. So, like, I've always just had an ice bundle in the boat, and it works awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah. I'm sure you spend more time in other people's boats because they want you to show them how to use their for stuff, sure. too. Yeah.
Like from a diagnostic standpoint, like, there's nothing better than having an ice bundle because, like, I can jump in someone's boat and, like, plug in all their live scope stuff. Like, I know my unit works. Plug it all into there. I can plug in transducers. Like, it, it works awesome. So,
mm-hmm. And you get spoiled so much with live scope too. It's like you start fishing with it, you get used to it, and then you go into another boat and you don't have live scope. It's like, man, it's like I'm almost fishing blind now.
yeah, for sure.
Oh. I've got an open water question. It's like the million-dollar question of open water fishing. But being the live scope expert you are, and I've got live sonar myself. How are you breaking down a lake that you've never been to? So is it like, does it start with looking at maps beforehand? Does it start with finding those contours, those spots, and then like, what do you do once you actually put a boat in the water?
So that's the funny part to me is like there's some controversy around forward facing sonar right now, right? Like in bass fishing, and you hear it, oh well, they got live scope, you know, doesn't matter, it's going to catch them, whatever. And it's like, you know, there was a tournament just recently where there was no forward facing sonar allowed, and they couldn't pre-fish only for like a couple hours. And it's funny because there were some live scope guys that were still definitely at the top of the pack, right? And like a good fisherman is a good fisherman. And live scope is a tool, but it's only one of the tools that we have. So like if I'm going to a big lake like Mille Lacs or, you know, Leech or one of these big lakes where I live up here in Minnesota, like I can't just completely rely on my live scope to go out and catch fish. Like map, extremely important. Like I want to have a Garmin Navionics Vision Plus card in my unit so I can find like very detailed spots and like go to those high percentage spots and then maybe look with my live scope, you know? And like, so live scope's only one piece of the pie, you know, where like once I get to a spot that I think looks good, like a nice break line or a mud flat or whatever they happen to be on that time of year, then I can look with my live scope and try to break down that specific spot. But I may also be, you know, running over a rock pile with my side imaging. I might also be running over some stuff with 2D sonar, you know, like to me, live scope's a big part of what I do, but it's also only one, you know, one tool in my box, you know? So, but what I will tell you is summertime, like Winnipegosh, Lake Mille Lacs, something like that, where I know these fish are going to be on mud flats, and you can get on a brake line, put that trolling motor to 10, and you just start scanning left, right, and looking for those fish and looking for the right fish on your forward-facing sonar. I mean, you can break a spot down quicker than what we were able to, you know, in the past.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's really like spot on the spot. Go from like finding to catching, because, you know, live scope is not effective if you don't get within 100 feet of your fish. Mm-hmm. You know, you still have to have a fishing knowledge to like know that there's going to be fish in this area.
Yeah, it's not like it provides you the spots, but it gives you the information when you find the spots.
Yeah, and like if you think about it, like, okay, so a guy goes out in a fishing tournament on Lake Fork or on Lake Mille Lacs, bass or walleye, right? Like, just because they have live scope doesn't mean that they come in at 10 o'clock with their limit. Like, a lot of times, like, still trying to get that last fish at 2 o'clock and I got to be back to weigh in at 3, you know? So it's like, yeah, I might see more fish and I might see the fish and I might, like, stumble into them, but, like, from like, a standpoint of like trying to catch all big fish or all certain size and that kind of stuff, like, it, you still got to work for them. It just, you know, the live scope might make it a little bit quicker and a little bit easier, but at the end of the day, it's not like the end all tool either.
Mm-hmm. It can be extremely frustrating too when you're like on fish and you know that they're there, but you can't get them to bite. Like, oh man, Winnipeg is a prime example. Like, I went up there and then we had a pressure change and, you know, I got to spots where like I would scan around in a circle and I'd see like 20 to 30 fish around me, but like I can't get them to bite. So
yeah, and I, like that, especially ice fishing when it's like 10 below out and the wind is blowing a little bit and you like drill a hole, you catch a couple crappies and you're sitting there and then you look like 50 feet to the right and like there they are, but you don't really want to move your house and go, you know, like sometimes it's, you know, there's other things too that keep you from catching them. So,
mm-hmm. Or then you finally work up the ambition to move that 50 feet and then drill and then they scatter as soon as you get back on them. Oh
yeah. Yeah. That is one thing I will say, like now having like live sonar where I can look under and see what the fish are doing. It is unreal how much your boat spooks fish, even in 25, 30 feet of water, how much walking on the ice spooks fish. Like at Shields Ice Fishing University this year, there was no snow on the ice. And like, it was almost like impossible to catch a fish. Mm-hmm. Like there's so many people on the ice walking and like, yeah, we could see them with forward facing sonar, but like, you were almost better off just hunkering down, using a flasher and waiting for the fish to come to you because like they were just, they could feel the pressure. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that's the funny thing. Like Mother Nature always has a way of winning no matter how good our technology gets, you know?
Mm-hmm. Amen to that.
So how much time goes into how many years maybe of research and product development, you know, to bring something like this to market?
It's a lot, you know, and like, to think and like you almost got to bring yourself back to like pre live scope because like we're so accustomed to it now, but it's like the technology was so crazy different and so much more advanced. And like part of the problem is like there's live sonar out there, there probably has been for a long time, but like making it affordable on a consumer level and that kind of stuff, like it's a lot. But that's a cool thing with Garmin is like we're a big company, you know, multi-billion dollar company into a lot of different categories. So like people obviously know Garmin for ice fishing and summer fishing here in Minnesota, but it's like our aviation category is like second to none. Fitness category with all the different watches does very well. Automotive, the side-by-side stuff, the bow sights, the chronograph we have now. Like there's just so many different things. So like the quality of engineers that we have is absolutely amazing. And then like the facilities that we have for these great engineers to do their work is amazing. So I feel like if anybody can do that kind of stuff, it is Garmin. But yeah, it's a lot. Like it takes the right people, it takes resources, you know, it's definitely not an easy undertaking. I mean, even like the trolling motor, like other companies out there already have trolling motors that are good. And like it still took us a long time to develop what we thought we wanted to have as a trolling motor. So I mean, a lot goes into the research and development. And when the next thing comes here in a couple of years, it's going to be like, oh my gosh. But you'll know that someone had probably been working on that for 3 years or more before it even came to market. So
that's a good point, though, that all of those different arms of Garmin, I'm sure you can, you know, hey, this is working in this area. Yeah. Take this piece and add it to that, you know?
Yeah, that's just like how the new Garmin chronograph came to be. Like, they develop launch monitors for golf, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we can use this technology and we can turn it into one of the coolest chronographs on the market now.
Cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
So, you know, for the people that are watching this in video form, like on YouTube or Spotify, they see a couple of giant bucks behind you. And like, as I've been going through this conversation, like obviously I've been thinking about fishing, but in the back of my mind, I cannot stop staring at those two bucks behind you. So I know you just, you got yourself a nice little piece of property. Let's talk a little bit about some food plots and some deer hunting. I got to hear it from you, Danny.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously I work in the fishing industry to support my deer hunting habit. Like, I absolutely love deer hunting and the outdoors. And I really like it all, but, you know, I'm a very social guy. I'm always out giving seminars and speeches and sales presentations. So when food plot season comes and I can just sit on the tractor and not necessarily talk to anybody and just kind of get that alone time, I love it. And absolutely same thing when it comes to bow season, you know, sitting in a tree and hunting and all that kind of stuff. You know, that's absolutely what I love. You know, I've grown up my whole life always being into the outdoors, hunting, fishing, that kind of stuff. I've worked in the outdoor industry my entire life since the age I was 12 when I started, you know, setting trap at a trap range. So like, it's definitely my life and my passion for sure. And deer hunting is a big piece of that, you know. And so along with that, all deer hunters, right, we always dream of someday owning our own piece of property. And I grew up a poor kid in central Minnesota. Like, we hunted state land, and it was, like, hard to find a spot and, you know, just kind of have something that you can do what you want with. So it was always my goal to try to buy some property that I could do my thing with, and food plots and tree stands and water holes and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's kind of where I went. I was able to somehow talk my wife into putting our entire life savings into our first property, and it worked out very well for us. So we timed things very well, and I was able to make a beautiful property in central Minnesota with some giant bucks on it. And I shot a nice buck there. My daughter shot a couple nice bucks there. My dad shot a nice buck there. And then I sold it to a guy, and he got his dream farm, you know. And now I've now moved on to my second dream farm, which is in western Wisconsin. So I'm working on that one right now and got some pretty big projects that I'm trying to get done there.
Yeah, that's always a ton of fun, though. So, like, when you bought this new piece, was it basically just, like, undeveloped or just, like, a little bit of stuff done? What's the mix of it and whatnot?
Yeah, so, like, in order to someday get to my dream property, I figured I'd have to buy and sell properties like four times. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on the second one. And then, so I bought something that it was a sugar farm, maple sugars, you know, like syrup farm. Okay. And so there was these plastic tubes running from all over the place, miles of this stuff. And it was like laying on the ground because it hadn't been done for a couple of years, and they left a little bit of a mess. And it was basically 80 acres of all woods, but it has, you know, the bones to become a great property. It's in the right area. It's in the Mississippi River Bluffs in western Wisconsin. There's giant deer that are in the neighborhood, and there was a 212-inch whitetail killed just down the road from me this year. Mm. So it's in a great area, and it had the makings to be a good farm. It just needs to be cleaned up. And the only problem I'm having now is I've sort of fallen in love with my neighbors. I've got the greatest neighbors in the whole wide world. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to get rid of this one. I might have to just keep this one and maybe buy a small one in Minnesota or something. But so I bought this farm. It's got a huge valley that runs from basically, you know, west to east. So there's a south facing ridge all the way across the entire property. I've got a food plot in the bottom, got a couple of food plots on top. You know, so I put in a trail system. I've been cutting trees down like crazy. to open up some of these food plots. And then I've got a lager coming in here in a couple of years because it's got a lot of sugar maples on it. And I want to get all those out of there. So a lot of big projects like that that I'm working on right now to just kind of finally transition it into something good.
That's awesome. Is it kind of a wintering ground with all that south facing slopes you mentioned?
A little bit, but so I'm kind of close to a river, and so the deer will summer there a little bit, depending on the crop rotation. But I got egg all around me and bigger egg around me. So like the thing about big mature bucks and really bucks in general, they don't like to travel far at all in the summertime. So they like to kind of live in that fringe stuff on the edge of a bean field. Mm-hmm. So if you can have a little bit of water, a big bean field, and some shady, breezy type of woods, they will go there and they won't travel far at all in the summertime. So I've got some of that stuff kind of over to the west of me where they'll summer. And then they kind of start moving into my property, and it's a very good like October, November, December property. But then when it gets really cold, except for this year in January, they move down to the river bottoms.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yep. Gotcha. Well, you know, at least you have the deer on your property at the right time of year anyways. So
Exactly. Yeah, like, I mean, and that's definitely one thing when you're looking for a good property is finding one of those ones where they live there in the fall and not necessarily in the summer or in the winter.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What's the timeline of like, I mean, I know you said it's going to be a couple of years before you have the loggers and stuff come in for things like that, but what's the timeline of developing a property like that? Like, what's that take?
Well, the cool thing with whitetail hunting and owning property is like, say you don't have a lot of extra budget. Like you can do big projects, you can do small projects, and everything will like have a role in making your deer hunting better. So like first year, I got that property first of the year. And so I had from January until September, essentially, to do everything I could to maximize that property for the first year. So for me, my program is go in, get some water holes in immediately. These bucks will, you can absolutely drive traffic with some water holes and direct these deer to where you want them to. The other thing is mock scrapes. Literally as simple as going and cutting off a grapevine or some sort of stick, depending on where your woods are. But you know, using a mock scrape, it's like a fire hydrant for dogs, a mock scrape for deer. So I have one of these mock scrapes and one of these water holes leading into a small food plot. Even if it's like going there with a backpack, leaf blower, and a rake and open something up. Domain Outdoors makes an amazing product called Hot Chick and No BS, where we can go in this time of the year and put in a food plot before the leaves get there and not have to open a lot of woods, you know? So there's like a lot of small things you can do, but just kind of getting them to drive that traffic through there. You can do bedding projects. So like if you can get some does bedding on your property, you're obviously going to get some bucks there. So some hinge cutting, any sort of forest, you know, improvements that you can make to kind of improve some of those bedding areas, just something that simple, you know, a chainsaw for a weekend. Find one of those koi ponds someone ripped out of their front yard and is given away for 20 bucks on Facebook Marketplace and a mock scrape. And I mean, you can have a setup, you know, for some deer and get in a pinch point and make it work. You don't necessarily have to be a guy that has thousands of dollars for backhoes and bobcats and bulldozers all the time either. So
if it is something like that, where you're, like you said, having it from the first of the year until September, and that's your time to kind of go and get stuff done, are you ever worried about like bumping stuff out of there right away for the summertime and then I'm not coming back? Or are you not super worried about that?
I'm not concerned about that whatsoever. So like, eventually, you know, I suppose you could worry about that, but like, my property is an investment for my whole family. It's not just, you know, my deer hunting property, even if I like to think of it that way. But like, my kids love to go there and go for rides on the four-wheeler and the side-by-side. My wife loves to go there and have fires and go for walks and do shed hunting. So like, I'm going to enjoy my property. I'm going to go there. I'm going to enjoy it. We're going to walk the trails. We're going to, you know, do work. I've got a tractor, so I'm in there all the time with the tractor doing work. And like, you know, deer live around people all the time. I, you know, now come, you know, October 1st, yeah, I'd probably try to stay out of there and let things kind of settle down. But during the summer, absolutely not. Like, I'm there to enjoy my place and, you know, do the improvements I want to do and whatnot. So
looking at it long term, that's good. I like that. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned your kids. How old are your kids?
So I got a daughter who's 13 and another daughter who's 11.
girl dad.
Oh yeah.
Another girl dad. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So are they more in? Oh, go ahead.
I come from a very boy family. So like my mom grew up on a dairy farm with six brothers, you know, and I had a brother and very boy family. And so now I'm in this, like, even my dog's a girl. So like very girl family now.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you 100% too. Like I had a brother, or I have a brother. And then, it was all boys. And then I was blessed with two girls. And now I just got a girl dog, too. So I am just vastly outnumbered in my
household. But I tell you what, girls still love to hunt and fish. And if anything, girls love their dads more than anything in the whole wide world. So, like, taking them fishing, and they absolutely love it. You know, both my daughters have been deer hunting now. My oldest shot a really nice buck. And the funny thing with girls is, like, they're more like persistent and more patient, like especially when it comes to deer hunting, I think, because like when I was a kid,
I'm gonna write that down.
First thing I seen, I was gonna shoot, I was gonna shoot whatever deer that came by. Or daughters are like, nope, like, you know, and they see what, you know, hangs in my basement, and they're like, well, I'm waiting for one of those. And I'm like, well, like, that doesn't happen, you know, very easily or very often. But like, I mean, they both, like, they, my youngest went last year and didn't shoot a deer because she didn't see one she wanted. So, you know, it's just, girls are definitely different that way, but I think sometimes in a good way.
Yeah. Wow. Kudos to her for that. Yeah. Like, mine are 3 and 8. So they haven't developed the whole patience thing yet, but
it's coming though. It's coming.
See how that goes.
Someday. Yeah.
Are they more into hunting than fishing then?
I would say, I don't know. Like, it's
whatever dad's
like
into.
It's like whatever season it is what we're into.
Sure.
There we
That's
go.
That's good.
Hey, yeah. I'm the same way.
Yeah.
Cool. Yep. All right. Well, Danny, thank you so much for your time. The information on the, you know, the Garmin Kraken and the Live Scope and just your kind of whole thought process on everything. It's been really good. And I'm glad you graced me with some deer talk too. I've really had the itch to talk about that. We've been on all these podcasts about fishing and whatnot, but it's like, I'm a deer hunter at heart, and I know Danny is too.
Months away, but it starts now.
And deer season is now. Like, that's what I always tell people. Like, the hunting part is like the easy part. Like, you just go sit in the tree then, right? Mm-hmm. But like, I feel so under pressure and under the gun to get the deer stuff done now. Like, I've only got till September. So yeah, this time of year is more deer season for me than deer season.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. So again, Danny, thanks for your time, and you know, best of luck in the boat and on your food plots, and you know, upcoming deer season too.
And we'll have fun at university.
Yeah, for sure. We'll see you soon.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to the Shields Outdoors Podcast. Stay tuned for future segments and visit our social media pages, Shields Outdoors on Facebook and Instagram, for daily updates.